Hello and welcome. I'm Alec Hogg. This is your BizNews Edge. Today is Tuesday, the 4th of August, and a big day for us here at BizNews. It's our 13th anniversary of the very first day that what was then BizNews.biz, BIZNEWZ.biz, made its first appearance. We knew we wanted to be called BizNews.com one day when we grew up. Well, it took us about a year before the URL became available from Russian owners. We purchased that for an independent fortune. But today, well, as with any good brand, it certainly has stood us in good stead. So welcome to our big day. And on the edge today, well, we're going to be talking here about issues that go from institutions versus improvisation. We've got a vote in Chwani that was rigged, that has been overturned by the court. We have an interview with Kali Creel, who's the chief executive of AfriForum, with my colleague Chris Stain. And then another interview to close out our show today with Ivor Isishevitz. He is the founder of a group called Paramount, which is one of the largest defense organizations in the world. It's based right here in South Africa. There's a defense industry. They make mainly vehicles, aircraft, do a lot of high-tech stuff. It is a private company, so the information is not that available, and that has brought out quite a lot of suspicion amongst certain of the, shall we say, left-wing media groups. But Isikovic's made quite a compelling argument to me today on why what he's doing is for the right reasons, and you can watch that full interview on BizNews. On top of that, we've got a couple of clips for you on the survey that the Paramount Group spends or sponsors every year, its foundation does rather than the group itself, and that is surveying youth in Africa. Nearly 5,000 young people who are interviewed on a one-hour face-to-face discussion. So it really does give you an understanding of how the young people in Africa think. And it was on the basis of that report, which has just been released, that Ivor gave us the interview today. It turned out to be quite a surprise, but we'll give you a couple of clips on that as we go forward. But let's start off first, though, with that story about Chwani. Now, the reason why this is relevant for a BizNews show and to give you the edge is that there was a report on SENS, the Stock Exchange News Service, this morning, which says it's official. Of course, the politicians from the Democratic Alliance, because they've had a great victory, have been all over social media proclaming their win here. But the note that came onto SENS, and indeed the court decision, do show a very nasty side to the Action SA ANC Alliance. They try to get hold of Mettler. They believe, or they will tell you, that it's for reasons that he's not doing a good job. The Democratic Alliance, on the other hand, say that he is. And the court said that doesn't really matter. What matters here was how they got rid of him. And in this instance, the speaker at the Chwani Metro deducted 13 votes from the vote. And those 13 votes, which were in favor of Mettler staying, were deducted because the people, the councillors, were on leave. So clearly what has happened here was that the ANC Action SA Alliance saw an opportunity while those councillors were away. They called a vote. The councillors came back from leave and voted to block it. But the speaker said, no, you're on leave. You can't actually give us your vote. So sorry, Mettler, you're out. And they even appointed a Dr. Kamalo, no, not the football player, to come in and take over. Well, the Democratic Alliance went to the High Court, and as the statement on SENS today says, and these are to those who've lent money to the city of Chwani, that's been reversed. We had to tell you, it is a price-sensitive discussion and information. We had to explain this to you because you own bonds which trade clearly on information within the Chwani Council, and he has been reinstated. the problem that could be arising here now for those who are doing business with the city of Chwani is they call it in law the fruits of a poisonous tree. So tenders that had been awarded during the absence of Mettler are now going to be null and void. That could be quite embarrassing for a number of people. On to the breaking news from the interview this morning between my colleague Chris Stain and Kali Creel, who is the chief executive of AFRI Forum, which has been under quite a lot of pressure lately from, one of the news outlets anyway here in South Africa, who believe that they are wasting the money that has been provided to them by those who support them. Well, Kali Creel came up with a headline that nobody has yet, and that is that the AFRI Forum will be taking on Julius Malema. They got a court victory against Malema some years ago when it was then the court then ruled with costs that Malema was not allowed to go along telling people about expropriation without compensation being something that was allowed. And as a consequence of that, he is now in breach of the court finding in the most recent utterances that he's made on that statement. Certainly that's what Kali Creel says. And as a consequence, they have now opened a new contempt of court case against Malema, who must be pretty irritated with the amount of money that he's having to spend on losing all of these cases. Be interesting to see who he ropes in as his counsel. They're also going to be attacking the government, the South African government, on the basis of expropriation. But I don't want to steal Chris's thunder. Go on to BizNews, go and have a look at that story. It is up now, either on BizNews TV or on BizNews.com, and you can pick up some very, very interesting discussions between her and Kali Creel. Well, from the court's undoing decisions to a market that's finally reopening one, if you've held Old Mutual shares in Zimbabwe any time in the last 6 years, your money's essentially been frozen, literally untraceable. Well, that changes next week. And the good news there is that the government of Zimbabwe decided that Old Mutual's share trading was manipulating its currency and did this 6 years ago. And as a consequence, it actually prevented anybody from trading in those shares. Well, the private sector's always got a way of finding its route around these crazy decisions that the politicians bring in. And on the 12th of August, trading starts on the Victoria Falls Exchange, not the Zimbabwe Stock Exchange. That's where the listing has been shifted to. And as a consequence, Zimbabweans who own the shares will be allowed to trade. Another indication that as try as you might, and my goodness, the Zimbabwean government certainly has done so, there will always be a way around it for sane and logical options. And here is one. Close the one exchange, well, someone will start another one. Right, well, after a market reopening to a market that's clearly wide open for business, let's talk money, investment news, starting with South Africa's most improved bank. Nedbank released interim results this morning, and if you want one number to remember from those figures, forget the headline number or headline earnings per share, which were virtually unchanged. That's a decoy. It looks almost flat. It isn't. Nedbank had a particularly good year, a good 6 month period. Its bottom line is up 12% on a year ago when you strip out the impact of a deal that was done with ETI, with a sale there of the West African operation. Remember, it's now bought into East Africa with NCBA, a push into that side of the continent, which investors are really enjoying. The share price was up today by 4.5%. Nedbank is looking pretty solid at the moment. And you can, well, if you're an investor there, you can be pretty comfortable by holding on to your stocks. And then on to the JSE itself. Here's one that you don't usually hear from directly because it's normally just the address where everybody else's news happens. But the JSE Limited is listed on its own stock market and it's just posted its own numbers and they are strong. Headline earnings per share, again for the 6 months to the end of June, just like Nedbank, were up here by nearly 19%. Net profit after tax nearly 17% higher. They are, however, starting something which knocked back the figures a little bit. They've got a process called Forge 2031, and that's something to watch. The new chief executive, Reddy, is driving that initiative. But she has been handing back money to shareholders in the past 6 months. There were 175 million rands worth of share buybacks that the JSE has concluded. The stock exchange's own share price, pretty solid at the moment, and it is trading now at a significantly higher price than it was at yesterday. Well, significant doesn't even start to describe the performance of Palantir as we move from our own stock exchange to the biggest and most ideological earnings story on Wall Street so far this week. Palantir's chief executive, Alex Karp, didn't just beat estimates. He used his letter to shareholders to declare a war of ideas, as he tends to do. And this one's personal for a lot of you. Palantir sits in our BizNews Ricardo US dollar portfolio. It's going to jump another 16% when Wall Street's trading opens this evening, our time. And the reason for that is that the figures so impressed the aftermarket, or what they call the pre-market in the United States, that the share price is up by more than 16% after a 2% gain yesterday. This is a company that continues to excite. It's in a whole new area. It is different to pretty much anybody else in the software field because it's embedded with its clients. And the second quarter profit got to a record $1.1 billion. Now, it's a record, not surprisingly, because Palantir only started breaking into profit relatively recently. It's been at it for well over a decade, and the building process is now over. It's now on the harvesting process. It's got profit margins there of 86%. So you can see that the hard work that was done in the past is now certainly paying off. It's US commercial business. And this was the area that investors were worried about because they're quite happy that Palantir is doing well in the government area. It's almost like the governments of, especially the US government and different parts of the US government, have liked what Palantir is offering by breaking down the silos between the information that is available and using artificial intelligence to make that palatable. Well, the commercial side of Palantir's business up 149% in the quarter under review. Share prices, market cap is now over $300 billion, but you get a feeling it isn't going to stop there. Well, every story today has really been about institutions and who controls them. So it's fitting to close with a man who spent 35 years fighting for a different type of sovereignty, defense industrial sovereignty for Africa. What does that mean? That means why should Africa have to buy its defense products from other countries and other operators around the world? Why shouldn't it be producing its own? And he's just published the biggest survey on young Africans and what young Africans think and who they believe we should be trusting to run their world. Ivor Isikovits is the founder of the Paramount Group. He says in the interview that we had, and it's a rare interview with this man, clearly because he's in the defense business. He hasn't really, as I mentioned to him after the interview, you aren't exactly a media slut. He doesn't really go out there and bang his own drum, but clearly he now feels that he's got something to say, And the Africa Youth Survey, which surveys nearly 5,000 young Africans across 16 countries, and the interviews of an hour each of them, it does have something to say. And let's kick off with, well, why China is winning the argument for Africa's youth that America used to own.
So what we find is that when we started the survey, there's no question the United States was perceived to be Africa's most important partner. It was also perceived to be Africa's most influential partner. And it was perceived to be the ideologically the partner that most African youth wanted to kind of pin their flags to. However, as things evolved post-COVID, that changed exponentially, because during the COVID experience, the United States was nowhere to be seen in Africa. But what was left on the continent were the telecommunications infrastructure that the Chinese had invested in and built, the dams that China had invested in and built, the stadiums China had invested in and built, the roads that China had invested in and built, and frankly, even the jobs that China had invested in by building mines and industrial activities. And I think that in that vacuum, the evidence of China's tangible, really measurable activity in Africa became very real to most young Africans. And then it was no longer about ideology. It was no longer about perception. It was about lived reality. And I think that that's the reason why China today is respected as much as it is. Look, young Africans are no longer, when what the survey is telling us is that young Africans are no longer interested in ideology. They're no longer interested in backing a political system. They want partners that are going to partner with them as equals, that are going to respect them, and that are going to invest in creating high value jobs and taking the continent to the next level. Now, the United States is falling behind fast because young Africans are sick and tired of being lectured to.
And another cut that really hit my sweet spot is Sikovits on the industry that he actually built and the national asset he says South Africa doesn't even know it has.
You know, there's no country in the world that has gone from a developing economy to a developed economy without a strong defense industry. The innovations that we have been able to maintain and develop in South Africa through the defense industry are unbelievable. My biggest sadness is that South Africans and the South African government don't understand the national asset that we sit with here. You know, today Paramount is sadly the last man standing. It was inevitable that the state-owned defense industry, despite passionate, very capable people that were in it, has been denuded to virtually nothing. And that, for me, is an absolute tragedy. You know, at a time when the rest of the world is hankering after defense industrial sovereignty, we have it. We have the ability to build an aircraft from scratch and put it into the international market. I mean, one of the very few, probably five in the last 50 years, military aircraft that have been developed in private hands and gone from concept all the way into commercial production in the world has happened here in South Africa and sits within the Paramount Group. We are the world's leaders in landmine-protected armored vehicles still today in the world, with more than 4,000 units in active service in the world. And South Africans don't even realize this. And I'm afraid part of the reason that we talk about Afro-optimism, part of the reason that we talk about whether the youth in Africa are optimistic or pessimistic, is because that perception is what drives reality in this country. Because South Africans tend to be so pessimistic about what's going on around them, they don't engage with these things. And, you know, although today I'm no longer active in the defense business from an operational point of view, I'm still very, very much a proud founder of Paramount, which is today a global business. South Africa and our footprint in South Africa represents a very, very small part of our global business. And I'm very proud of what we've managed to achieve as Africans in the defense industry, which is such an incredibly complex and competitive industry around the world.
I'm reminded of what Herbert Spencer said, and I can't quote it directly, but to give you an understanding, he said, when you make up your mind about something before investigating it, you are guaranteed to keep yourself in a state of perpetual ignorance. I suggest that you don't make up your mind about Ivo Isikovic until you go and watch that interview, that discussion that I had with him. I did say to him, admittedly, that it wasn't a gotcha interview. I didn't take the work that has been done by investigative journalists at Ama Bongani or the allegations that have been made by many of the organizations, media organizations in South Africa, which have landed them up in court because he is litigious. I didn't take that information and gotcha him on that. That wasn't the interview's purpose. It was to find out what is this Paramount Group about? What is he about? And indeed, what's his story? And the survey that came out as well does give us some useful insights. Well, all of that worked out, I thought, in quite an interesting conclusion, and I do suggest that you go along and watch it. Well, that has been your Edge for today. Thank you for spending part of your morning with us. Don't forget to pick up those full interviews with Isikovic and Kali Creel and everything else that's moving markets today. Head across to biznews.com. Until tomorrow, cheerio.